Blog Talk Radio.
Good man, a lot of fun.
Which direction we are going?
Direct to El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Have reached a tipping point.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the tipping point. I am Stephen Platinum, and joining me is Matt Hankins, Miss Rachel. Matt Hankins, get this, Miss Rachel this week is in Ireland. She is trying to outdo my excuses for being late. I went to Hawaii, so of course she, being a young person, had to outdo me by going to Ireland. Do you think, here's a question right off the bat, keeping you off balance. Is Ireland ready for Miss Rachel?
No, it's not. I mean, you know, she's firehead, kissed by the gods, hell as shit, she's going to blend in and then sucker punch him right in the jaw with that sharp American wit and just overall haughtiness.
Speaking of not quite ready for her, Miss Rachel, a great accounting of herself against Angelina Love, TNA superstar, six-time knockout champion on July 4th. Matt Hankins, no big secret. That was your baby.
It was.
That's my child saying she's right next to her sister, Elena, as I'm almost home from dinner. But you're going to have to put up with my four-year-old caterwauling in the background and being adorable. Tell me, Matt Hankins, your overall impressions of PCW's Revolutionary War show on July 4th.
So here's the deal. We had to make a call very early on about whether we were going to be inside or outside. And we made a decision to go inside, and we stuck with it. We didn't wish-wash. We said it's not worth the risk. Wrestlers getting hurt in the rain, the setup, it's not worth it. Let's just make a change.
Right.
And that caused great trepidation, as it should, anytime you have to make a change like that day of the show. And then our people went out and gave the show that made no one remember that we weren't outside and that we were supposed to be outside. They did not care because, quite frankly, it rivals any show PCW has ever done from top to bottom, from performance to performance, that I have seen, and I've seen a lot of them.
Yes, you have.
And I could not have been prouder, could not have been happier, aside from the ending of the main event and how it went down. But as far as the performances that our talent gave, could not be beat. Could not have been a better atmosphere. The main event was absolutely stuffed to the gills. Literally had to turn people away. This is not a promoter telling you that. It's not me saying we had them hanging from the rafters because we really had them hanging from the rafters.
There were a lot of people packed into that space. It was to see Brian Kane get a shot at the biggest match of his career against Davey Richards and hold his own with something. And of course, Rachel and that main event with Carpenter's team getting the Duke. So they've set up Carpenter apparently versus Shane Marks, the PCW champion, in 2 weeks. And because it was indoors, I imagine that we'll be able to drag a lot of those people who may have been first time PCW people to that show for the first time. Yeah, normally, like July 4th, because, I mean, hundreds of people see that show, but they're all kind of standing outside of a fence. And
you're
I always
around,
think,
you're doing this, you're doing that, you're playing ducking games, you're buying a snow cone.
Yeah.
This was a captive audience. And this
is a captive audience. It was definitely a success. Very proud of it. I think the unsung hero of the night was Quasi Man Disco. That guy was all over the show. The three biggest segments were obviously the War Games, where Brian Kane reemerged to take out Supernatural, and then Rachel had a dust up with Quasi. The Angelina Love match, where Quasi was in Angelina's corner and ended up getting laid out by her, right? Mm-hmm. And then the Brian Kane Davey Richards match, where Brian Kane lost a close match, but then Quasi got into it with me, and I put him down, and I was so proud of myself. And then out came a new guy in Quasi's stable, who laid out Davey Richards and me. I mean, Quasi had a huge night, and I got to say this, I think it puts him squarely in contention for Manager of the Year, and his is a name that we have not heard before in that realm. It's perpetually Jeff G. Bailey, but yes. Miss Rachel has emerged lately. Certainly guys like Wicked Nemesis are often there at the top, guys like Reverend Dan, but Quasi, I think the perception is now different. I don't think he's a comedy act guy. No. I think he's a can-do-it-all guy, and
adage in the old school. Yep. They'll tell you anytime that you have a manager who is not liked by the people. If anything happens to that guy, if they finally get what they want, then he doesn't matter anymore. And in the span of a night, Quasi got beat down, taken out, and then got it all back before the night was up.
Yes. More than once.
Yes.
More than once that cycle happened. You know, there's a saying in the wrestling business, funny doesn't make money, right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of, again, one of those chestnuts of the old school. Now, PCW, I tend to think that we do funny better than anybody, at least intentionally, right? But boy, July 4th, serious as a heart attack. We always in our booking meetings, we call that, like, that's the road to Sacred Ground. And Sacred Ground is going to be September 26th at Seven Stages Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. Finally, PCW is going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's in conjunction with the returning Brawl show at Dad's Garage, which always gets a lot of attention. So that's going to be bonkers. But I don't want to just talk about PCW. I would be remiss to not mention Peach State. But before I mention Peach State show, I want to talk about what we're going to talk about tonight. Matt and I are going to break down all the major Georgia leagues, and we're going to talk about what people are doing right and a little bit of what they can learn from one another.
In the swamps of Florida might have claimed Stephen Platinum. But what Steve was saying is that we're going to continue to talk about what people are doing right, what can be learned, and what everybody's kind of got going on right now, because the state of the state is sort of in a very even stage right now. There's not anything crazy to talk about on the upside, but luckily I don't see a whole lot on the downside as well. And we'll get into that when we get Steve back. It looks like I've got somebody wanting to join in. Let me check and see who this is. Hello, welcome to Tipping Point. Who have I got?
You've got Larry Goodman.
Oh, my God. Let me get off here. I didn't know, Larry. I didn't know. I'm sorry. I was in your seat. Let me move.
No. There's no way you could know. I'm calling from the palatial Plan of Georgia office suite in beautiful downtown Sandy Springs, so you could not have recognized the number I was calling from. So I understand why you did not put me on the air. You don't want to put any crackpots on the air. We had enough of that on the show last night. Good grief. You surely want to take a chance on that.
I've lived that life before, Larry, and I'm terrified of pushing that button. So, Larry, what's good? Have you seen wrestling in some time? I know you've been sort of out of the loop.
I've been out of the loop. I did see a Chicago Cubs game. A losing effort, but a good game. A
reliable disappointment.
Yes. Well, come on now. They've got a good team this year. I mean, I don't think they're going to go anywhere in the playoffs if they make it.
It's July, Larry. Let's not go crazy. It's July.
You're right. I shouldn't get too excited.
But
I dropped into the nexus. Wait, what are you guys talking about? Who's going to make the playoffs? What are we talking about?
Larry's talking about the terrible Cubs because he doesn't know any better.
Larry, are you implying that the Cubs are going to make the playoffs, Larry?
I they got a good shot at the wild card. I know.
You're going to have to make the argument. How are they going to make the wild card?
Well, they're very close right now. They just got a good pitcher in a trade the other day, and I mean, you know, they got a good young team. I'm not saying they're going to go anywhere, but they could make the wild card. I'm not delusional.
Now that there are two wild cards, I'll say that your chances increased exponentially. I will that.
There you go.
Joe Maddon is a great manager, and he's done more with less. And you got a hot shot rookie prospect, and all that doesn't matter because the jersey still says Cubs.
Vicious. So, Larry, I need to clarify something. So, because with you Chicago people, we have to do this. So, you're a Cubs guy, not a White Sox guy, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Your football team is... Who's your football team? I just have to make sure.
The Bears.
Okay, I'm making sure. I never know. I know weird Chicago people. Like, I never know where Jagged Edge is on anything, right? Like, colleges, anything. It's like, Jagged, you're from Chicago. Why are you talking about this college? I just don't get him at all. So, okay. So, and you're a Bulls fan, I assume?
As well, yes.
For basketball. Okay, cool. So cool. Well, what I was talking about before the call dropped out was – Peach State show. So they dropped the ticket prices, and they took a chance. They booked for their main event a 1-hour Ironman match between Jimmy Rave and their champion, Tyson Dean, which Jimmy Rave won with a submission at the last minute, at the last second almost, to take it 2-1. So Jimmy Rave is now their title holder, their champion. And they also changed the other title, Fry Daddy won, I believe, in a ladder match. So, I'm gonna throw this question out there, and this is not me like second guessing their booking, but this is me second guessing their booking. So you have a show where you don't know what your attendance is going to be like. You're a little spotty about it, which is why you dropped the ticket prices in the first place, right? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I'll just reveal this. PCW on our July 4th show, it was a blessing in disguise to be moved inside, because at that point, because of the talent we were bringing in, we felt like it was a big show. We raised the ticket prices higher than they've ever been, and we packed the place. Because we knew it was going to be absolutely packed to the gills. So do you do two major moves on a show where your attendance is probably not going to be as high? Is it a good move? I mean, I can see arguments either way.
I would never pull the trigger on that move, but I can see where Peach State did it, and I don't blame them for doing it. They're struggling to struggling. They are efforting to educate their crowd to a certain level of things. They usually don't have 4th of July fall in their lap as it has, so they had to do something to make it worth missing whatever you missed to come to their show for 4th of July. They're in a building that is not their bread and butter. They've done fine there, but not as good as they had done in the past at the fairgrounds. So I understand why they made that move, and I think you just live with the consequences.
Larry, I'm going to ask you a question, because you've been, I'd say, the biggest proponent of Jimmy Rave. And now, I mean, Jimmy Rave, undeniably, like, I think I was slow to come to this, but I think it's undeniable at this point that Jimmy Rave is the wrestler of the year for this year. I mean, I almost don't care what happens in the last few months. That's just being honest. I mean, he had the match with AJ Styles, and now he's the Peach State champion. He's on a roll. Do you think Jimmy Rave winning this title for Peach State, do you think that they've got something really good for him to do? Or is it going to be the thing where the story was better when Jimmy was chasing? I mean, we've seen that before with any number of people where the chase was gold, the chase was money, but then their reign as champion was kind of nondescript. What do you think is going to happen? Because, I mean, you've definitely seen a bunch of great Jimmy Rave matches at Peach State and the direction they're going. What do you think is going to happen with that title reign?
Well, I wouldn't underestimate I don't underestimate Rick Michaels as a booker to develop a formidable heel opponent with, that can get a whole lot of heat. And
yeah.
I also don't underestimate Jimmy Rave's ability to get good matches out of just about, compelling matches out of just about anybody. So I would say it has to be proven otherwise that this isn't going to work. I would lean towards that this will work because of the people involved.
Cool. Matt Hankins, real quick, and then we'll get to the topic at hand. Actually, I would love to play the Izzy High that we didn't get to last week with a little while Larry is for sure here. You've been at Peach State. Larry's seen a number of their shows. And I don't know the answer to this question, which is why I'm asking it. Is Jimmy Rave that over? Is he over? I mean, I know he's a great wrestler. I know he has great matches. Okay, he's over.
No, Jimmy's over. And the Iron Man, and I heard from enough people who were not affiliated directly with Peach State that, you know, I can kind of filter through whatever noise might have been in the conversation. But I think Jimmy's over. The Iron Man was received well. And, I mean, let's be honest, folks. There's not a whole lot of places that can pull off an Iron Man match on their card. It's hard to do.
There's two. I mean, there's two, arguably three. PCW's done it a bunch of times. I think Peach State can now do it. And in theory, Larry, let me ask this. Has there ever been a one-hour Iron Man match at Wildside or Anarchy before? I'm sure there has. I just can't recall it.
Hey, I'm with you. It seems like there has to have been, but it doesn't come to mind for me, no.
Okay.
I feel like if there was one that was super successful, we would all be able to dial it up really quickly. We'd be able to say,
that's
oh,
true
yeah,
too.
That was the time that X fought Y and everybody went. So it's not easy to do. And they did it.
Right.
And they didn't lose the crowd. They didn't lose them. And that's the strength of Jimmy Rave getting himself over. And I've been there enough to know that it was a very slow process, and it was one that I didn't think could come to fruition. Honestly, I mean, my God, if there was a wrestler who was less likely to get over with that crowd, it's Jimmy Rave. He's the perfect example of what will not work at Peach State in the olden times.
Yeah.
But I think he's over. Now, the struggle is who do you put with him? And I don't know the answer to that either. I agree with everything Larry said about the talent at hand.
Let me say this before we move on. I think as much as credit as Jimmy Rave is getting for that match getting over, should also give credit to Tyson Dean. I think that's a guy who, if Jimmy Rave is right now the front runner for Wrestler of the Year, I think Tyson Dean has to be the far and away front runner for Most Improved. That's a guy who, when we did the MGCW-PCW angle, he was dismal. I put the dis in dismal, okay? It was, he was not good. But thank goodness for him, there was the presence of Mr. X to take the heat off of him. Mr. X was the Paul Roma of that group. But Tyson Dean was not good. And he worked very hard to become good. And, you know, a lot's made of his, like, sort of cosmetic change where he's, you know, in shape, looks the part, and all that stuff. But if that's all it was, I don't think you get through an Iron Man match. I think it's obviously a conditioning thing, but it's also just an in-ring work thing, a guy who's listened a lot. And, you know, so good congratulations to both of those guys. Okay. Let's get to this Izzy High. Matt Hankins, do you want to prep Larry for what we're about to listen to?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to. So, one of the lost arts, especially in the wrestling that airs on today's TV is the immediate post-match promo to set up the thing that you're really wanting people to focus on, right? So what better way to do that than with a long analogy about a dream you had about your father? Ladies and gentlemen, is Terry Funk high?
Because I got high. Because I got high. La, 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 da,
it's da, time da. To play Is He
High? Talked about a fucking pound of weed and played a bunch of video games.
Weed is tight. Right, weed is tight.
By
that's
here
awesome.
With Terry Funk. Rick Flair has said that on July the 1st, right here on Superstation TBS, he will make his announcement whether to surrender the championship or to defend the championship, but I'll tell you this, off the record, he said he was going to take care of you one way or the other, somewhere down the line, my friend.
Oh, let me tell you something, Jim Ross, and you simple-minded people, I had a dream last night. Oh, yes, and it was a beautiful dream. I dreamed that I was on the front porch of the Double Cross Ranch, and my father, who's long since gone, was there in a swing, swinging with me, and up drove a long black limousine, and the left front fender was dented in, and the door opened, and out stepped a beautiful lady, and my daddy said, "Woman, what happened to your left front fender?" And she says, "I ran over some kind of an animal on the road. I don't know what it was." My daddy said, "Well, what did it look like?" And she says, "Well, it had great big ears. And it had nostrils, big, huge nostrils, about 5 inches apart. And it had horse teeth. And it smelled real bad." And my daddy said, "My world, girl, you must have ran over a jackass." And I said, "What did it smell like?" She said, "It smelled like hairspray and cheap cologne." I said, "Woman, you didn't run over any jackass. You ran over Ric Flair. Is he dead?" She says, "No, but the last time I saw him, he was running scared." "Well, let me tell you something, Ric Flair. You look at me in the eye because I am looking at you. You realize that you must live not in the future because there is none. You must live in the past. Give up that belt or I'll stick your neck out one more time for me. Stick it out for me, Flair. You gutless individual. I'm talking to you.
That's enough.
Stick it out. Stick it out."
We're not going to listen anymore to this, fans. We'll be back with a Steiner.
How great is it to hear, by the way, Jim Ross in a segment with Terry Funk in his prime talking about Ric Flair? I just, for all of things that WCW did wrong, which was 98.5%, boy, when they got it right, they got it right. I got to ask, Matt Hankins put you right on the spot. Terry Funk, is he high?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he's just consumed with being Terry Funk. I think that goes on in Funk's head all the time. I think anytime Funk is speaking in terms that we can understand and make points out of, that's when he might be high. But I think right there is the inner monologue of Terry Funk just opened up to the world.
Larry Goodman. Stick out your neck for me, Ric Flair. Larry Goodman, I'm sure you've seen your share of Terry Funk matches in all different eras. Terry Funk right there. What year would that have been, by the way? That's about, like, 94, I want to say.
That sounds about right. Yeah, 93 maybe.
The only good thing that happened in the Jim Hearn era, perhaps?
Yeah.
Is that, I think that's right too, right? That's the only good thing in Jim Hearn era. Besides the Steamboat Flair stuff. So Larry Goodman is Terry Funkheimer?
I thought Matt Hankins stated it very eloquently.
Yes.
I really have little to add to what he said. I say no for all the reasons he stated.
Well, allow me to be the contrary voice. I will say this. He's not high. He's not drunk, right? He's not stoned. But if you will recall, Terry Funk, at that point in his career, is it safe to say he was in the best shape of his life?
Yeah,
I just remember those stunning, spectacular, wonderful. So high? No. Drug-assisted in some kind of way? Perhaps. Perhaps. And, you know, anything that could possibly mess with Terry Funk's brain chemistry is a place you don't want to be. So for the first time, I think we all agree that they are not, that Terry Funk is not high. We're going to do a different segment to close the show today, by the way. Matt Hankins has collected a number of wrestling commercials for us to listen to and analyze, which ought to be pretty great. But, all right, let's jump into a league. Here's what I want. I want somebody to just name a wrestling league of some prominence in the state of Georgia, and then we're going to quickly talk about what they're doing right. So does anybody have a league they want to throw out there right from the jump?
Empire.
Ooh, great choice.
Excellent.
Well, Larry, since you threw them out there, I think it's up to me and Hankins to start the conversation. Hankins, what's one thing Empire is doing right?
They own their own thing as good as anyone else does. Possibly.
Mm, define that for us.
And that's including us at PCW. Empire, when you see a poster, it's an Empire poster. When you see a match has been made, you know that's an Empire thing. Even though they're using guys that work everywhere, there's just certain combinations and certain branding that they have that if I'm just scrolling through Facebook and I'm not paying attention to, you know, whose stuff I'm actually looking at, I know an Empire poster immediately.
Absolutely right. Here's my thing of what they're doing right. And see, now we're taking all away from Larry. But here's something they're doing right. I think they may have the best combination of the relationship between the promoters, who are, correct me if I'm wrong, the Mullinexes, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Promoters, Booker, and Andrew Alexander, and those intangible guys that help shape and define your show, like Reverend Dan. I think that they are the best sort of holy trinity of a wrestling promotion out of anybody, where, I mean, everybody's got a role, everybody understands that role, and they allow people to sort of run wild with their vision.
Yep.
I mean, Empire used to do a show every so often. Now, it seems like they do, damn near two shows a week, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're working with a lot of different people. They're experimenting. But, man, it is so clear that the Mullinexes are down for whatever. And then Andrew's allowed to kind of run wild with his imagination. And then guys like Reverend Dan are there to try to, like, make sure things make sense, to be an alternate voice and somebody that the boys respect along with Andrew. That's what I think they're doing right. Larry, is there anything that you think we haven't covered as far as the secrets to what Empire is doing right?
Well, it's something that I've touched on a number of times, production values.
Oh, yeah.
The best around, the best overall entertainment presentation of any promotion in Georgia, bar none.
Let's have a specific example. I mean, what's a specific example of that? Because they've had a number of great things.
Well, the Reverend's live segments with the podium and the smoke and the lighting and all that, creating a mood and an atmosphere for his live segments. I think that's very well done. And then the way they interweave backstage vignettes with the live show so that it really enhances the live show.
I'm thinking in particular
Velvet Rope. Just that tiny little touch of Sean Tippers having a velvet rope that his manager opens for him that he walks out.
I love it.
Like, that's ridiculous.
I think like the teased retirement angle involving Sean Tempers and Andrew, I mean, all that stuff, when I watched those video packages, it was just like seeing Wildside more than a decade ago, where I was jealous, you know, where anytime I look at something that you're doing and I kind of hate you because it's so good, that means you're doing it right. Or anytime you do something and I go, God, I wish I thought of it.
Wish that'd been me.
You're doing it right. So, I mean, if you're listening to this, wrestling people keep sleeping on it. Am I wrong in saying this, that people are kind of sleeping on Empire a little bit?
Yeah,
I beat that drum a lot. And, oh, man, there's a lot to learn from Empire, and a lot of leagues need to. Mr. Hankins, can you throw out a league for us, please?
Let's talk about Anarchy.
Ooh, Anarchy. I'll open up. Here's something that they are doing right. They present a very serious, realistic product. They pride themselves on it. There isn't this sense, never do you get a sense when you watch an Anarchy show that you're seeing fat, schlubby, you know, the fat, schlubby Georgia indie guy. That guy does not exist at Anarchy, or at least they do a good enough job of presenting their product and taking it so seriously that that guy would not have a place in that league. There's very few wrestlers that almost every league, especially the terrible ones, have guys that you look at and they're just presented so poorly. They just don't deserve to be there, if we're being honest. They look like people who stepped out of the crowd and jumped into the show. And that's something that I know Larry hates in particular. But I think Anarchy does a great job of avoiding that. More than perhaps any other league outside of Empire. So that's my take on what Anarchy is doing right.
I think there's very little fat on their shows. Not everything may work, but everything is out there for a purpose and for a reason. And I think they do that very well. And of course, the obvious thing, work rate. If work rate's your thing, that's the place to go.
Yeah. Hankins, you got the tough job now. What else is Anarchy doing right?
I think the thing that Anarchy is doing, as far as I'm concerned, the most right, is Shadow Jackson.
Oh.
I think just letting him be him. My personal taste, the things that I've been the most consistently entertained by at Anarchy, is Shadow Jackson. How when he's a heel, he's just the goofiest, the screaming and the yelling, and it gets me every time. I will stand up and cheer like I'm going down the midway with my big lollipop for Shadow Jackson. And the temptation would be, all right, he's really captivating and funny in the ring. Let's do something goofy with him. But then they don't. They let him be involved in serious angles. They let him be in title matches, and it's all played seriously. But they don't try to stop him in the ring from doing what really works.
Oh, that's great. Now, since we've talked about Empire and Anarchy, I'm just going to throw this toss up. What's something that Anarchy can learn from Empire?
Making new guys in a very meaningful way. It's not to say that Anarchy does not do it. I think nobody, you know, BJ and Billy Buck, I think all those guys have been made better by Anarchy. But when Empire does it, they take a guy that seemed like KT Hamill, whose name was not on anybody's lips a few months ago.
Yeah, that's
who
for
all
sure.
Of us knew was incredibly talented. found a way to get him where he needed to be, that people are starting to talk about it. You might matter. Anarchy does not do as good a job as making people matter all over as they do as making people matter at Anarchy. Empire has found a way to take their guys who people might have never heard of and make them be more known all over the place.
Cool. I'm going to throw a league out. Peach State. Larry, what's something Peach State's doing right?
Emotionally involving their fans in the stories.
Mm.
Nobody's doing that better, in my opinion.
I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Personal issues,
yep,
sell tickets. It was
yep,
on the wall in Memphis, and it's as true now as it ever has been. In fact, it's probably more true now than it ever has been. Interesting side note. So the WWE Raw that happened last week, the second lowest rated non-holiday Raw since 1997.
Yeah.
And that show is supposed to be the lead-in for Tough Enough.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I mean, I haven't heard about anything along these lines. I can't imagine that there isn't a sense of mild panic going on, at the very least, at the WWE. I mean, you've got Brock Lesnar. You're pulling out stops. Right, they're pulling out the stops. They did the tried and true, we're busting up somebody's car nonsense yesterday. I mean, you want to talk about? It reeks of WCW. I mean, WCW,
yeah,
were the original. Like, when things are down, let's destroy something.
Bust up a car. I think the scariest thing from that is that there was a replay last Saturday of that Raw. The USA thought it was low enough that maybe people just couldn't watch it.
Wow. I mean, and when you look at Peach State, Larry said it best. I think there's always an eye on that. I'm going to go ahead and get mine out there to screw Matt Hankins over. And
yeah,
my thing that they're doing right is they transitioned from the Mike Jackson booking team to the Rick Michaels booking team, not only seamlessly, but I think the perception is that there was a massive upgrade, that instead of there being a schism of, oh, I like the way that Mike used to do it. I mean, I don't care what you transitioned to. There were probably people who missed the Jim Herd era at WCW. There was somebody who was bitching, because wrestlers are good at two things, getting drunk and bitching. So there was somebody who was like, I miss Jim Herd. But I didn't hear hide nor hair of a person going, oh, I don't know about this direction. I kind of wish Mike was back. In spite of the fact that they had a lot of stuff to deal with, right? Loss of venue. They remember when they were having to juggle venues and all this other stuff? But they've managed to make that transition. It's clearly Shane Knowles and Rick's show. And people are in for the long haul on this process of re-educating their fans. They've gotten everybody to buy in and be happy with it, which is fantastic.
Along
so,
those
Matt,
lines.
Yes, sir.
I think that my sense is that their morale in their locker room is at an all-time high as well. From
absolutely.
What I can see.
Larry, you sniped me. You got me, Larry
oh.
Goodman.
That's what you get, Hankins.
I've been in that locker room, and I can attest to that fact. And that's absolutely right. And I'll say another thing, though. I think, and it
yeah.
goes along with what you just said, is I think that what they've done great is not falling back into old habits. Because while at the end of this, we see the transition, and you're absolutely right, it appears seamless. But during the juggling period and during this and during that, it would have been very simple to say, you know what, this ain't working. We need to nurse them along a little bit. Let's do it a little bit the old way. Let's bring in some of the old guys who used to get them going. Let's do that, and then just, you know, we'll try to educate them along a little slower. They didn't do that. Yes, you might have saw those guys a show or two, but there was never a shift where those guys were the focus, and they stayed
yeah.
the course, and now they're getting what I think they want, which is an educated crowd who can appreciate wrestling as much as they do storytelling. And there's a positive buzz around that promotion.
Larry, be honest. You miss Dragon a little bit, though. I mean, I know they brought him back for the one. So what is something that Peach State could learn from either or both Anarchy or Empire, the first two groups we talked about? What's something that they need? They need what's a little mojo from one of those two groups that they need?
Well, I mean, I think they could do more in the production value area. They're pretty bare bones in that respect. I think that some upgrading there would be a benefit to them.
Yeah.
You know, the
yeah.
only promos I can ever remember seeing are from Shane Knowles whenever he's in
yeah.
an angle. And though that's highly effective, but you know, that's because of who Shane Knowles is, but I don't know. It certainly couldn't hurt. One thing that holds me back as far as Jimmy Rave goes is I never see anything from Jimmy Rave, even from AWE, who tends to do a lot of videos with their guys. I don't really see the Jimmy Rave stuff out there. I think Peach State, it would behoove them to throw some of that production weight, to throw some production weight behind Jimmy Rave, to throw some production weight behind these stories that they're telling and crafting, like, you know, the rise of Ace Haven, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a great answer. Larry, throw a league out for us.
How about NWA Atlanta?
Oh. Matt Hankins, since Larry and I have been sniping all the good stuff, why don't you start? And NWA Atlanta, which you frequent, you've been there, right? What's something they're doing right? Another
booking,
Rick Michaels book show.
Booking DeWitt Dawson and Shane Marks is the best move they could have made.
Yeah.
I think that what they're doing is they are rewarding their fans for loyalty with quality. Those are some long-suffering fans.
Yeah.
Long-suffering fans. I see, you know, every time I'm there, I always see someone that I remember seeing and talking with the first time that I ever interacted with that promotion, which would have been during one of the big shows at Stockbridge during the PCW. Well, it was not during, but just after the PCW, MGCW invasion. So I know what those people sat through. And what they're doing is they're giving them a quality card, and they're not asking too much of them. They're giving them a quality card. It's going to be 5 or 6 matches. It's 1.5 to 2 hours at the absolute max. Nothing's going to go too long. Keep it moving to make sure those people are happy and constantly entertained.
Larry, what's something that they're doing right at NWA Atlanta?
You know, I have to this is a very vanilla answer, but just overall show quality. I haven't seen enough of their shows to give a lot of specifics. But going there a couple years ago and going there this summer, just overall show quality was so much better.
Yes, that'll kind of dovetail into what I was going to say, which is, I'll say this for NWA Atlanta, they're willing to put their money where their mouth is. They wanted
Absolutely.
A better show, and so you've got to spend money. You've got to get Rick Michaels. You've got to, and then Rick Michaels is going to bring in a better quality of person. The NWA Atlanta, when they were MGCW, the one thing that they did have was they had sort of a deeper group of incredibly loyal wrestlers. Now, the reason they had that deep base was because those guys couldn't get fucking work anywhere else, if we're being honest. But nonetheless, I mean, they had a loyal crew that would work on the cheap or free. Now they've had to become a mercenary show, but at least they're spending the money in the right way, and they're getting guys in there. I mean, almost everybody, I think if we look back at their cards, we would find that almost everybody has worked for them at one time or another. They've brought a lot of people in and tried a lot of things. And they've probably used more quote unquote name talent from the outside than anybody. You know, like Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. And I mean, like it used to be almost every one of their shows. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they've definitely upgraded that promotion, though I hate that name with a passion. I could not hate the fact that they call themselves NWA Atlanta anymore. But what's something that NWA Atlanta can learn from Peach State, from Anarchy, or from Empire?
I think that it might be time to up the seriousness a little bit, a la Anarchy. It might be time to get a little bit more violent. They've got Pain and Bill the Butcher there, and you know, those are monsters. It might be time to do something, and I think that they may be planning to do something at their big show in a couple weeks that might get along those lines, but it might be time for a little more of that. And it might be time to pull the trigger on moving Tyson Dean to the other side and making him the focal point.
I'm going to say something along those lines. I think one thing the NWA Atlanta does not have that the other three leagues that we've already talked about do have, what is NWA Atlanta? What's the identity? I don't think they have one at all. I mean, if you disagree with that, please make it known. But I don't know what that league is. I don't think that they have – I think they're kind of Peach State-esque in some ways. I also think that they – this is going to get me in trouble. And we're supposed to keep it positive. But I got to say, I think I like NWA Atlanta's fan base the least. I think it's like a tough crowd to play in front of.
It's just a tough crowd to play in front of. I'll tell you that. I'll say this, though, about them. What they like, they love the shit out of. And what they don't like, they won't hate it vociferously. They will just harumph it. I think that's what you react to. Because Fry Daddy is the beating heart. He's the thing. There are very few people who are in front of their home crowd as Fry is in front of his. He is completely the darling of that place. But if they don't care, man, they don't care.
Yeah. Matt Hankins, give us a league. I love this discussion,
right,
by the way.
Let's talk about AWE.
Oh.
I'm sure it's an interesting one to a lot of folks, given who's on here.
AWE, Larry, you've probably been to more of their shows than either Hankins or I. What's something AWE's doing right?
Well, the easy one is presenting matches that you cannot see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
They're consistently presenting matches that and matchups and talent that you're not going to see on any other Georgia show.
They're doing
Hankins.
That.
What's something else they're doing right?
They stay the course better than any of us do. They have decided who their audience is. They have decided where they want to operate, where they want home to be. And through hell, high water, they will not be moved. They're going to keep doing exactly what they're doing. As Larry said, they're going to bring in this top indie talent as they can get their mitts on, and they're going to keep putting on shows. You know, they want to be PWG. They want to be of that ilk, and they're still reaching for it. Regardless of the outcome, they will not be moved.
Here's something that is going to shock you that I'm going to say about AWE. And not only is it going to shock you, I would say almost all of the other leagues that we have talked about could learn this from them. So it is high praise indeed. They are very good. And I'm thinking specifically of the poster that Hankins sent. Hankins sent me, Larry, Miss Rachel, posters from all of the leagues to sort of remind us who they were and what they're doing.
And out of all of those posters, the PCW poster stands out. Of course it does, right? I mean, we got poster making motherfucker, right? Our guy is the best, flat out, right? But the other poster that caught my eye was that Sabu Murder One poster. And here's what I'm going to say about that they're doing right. They're better at creating the big fight feel for a match than just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the last time. I mean, name an NWA Atlanta match that had a big fight feel. Maybe when Tyson Dean took on Rob Conway for the NWA title. Right. But beyond that, AWE consistently, and this ties into what Larry said about them, they're presenting matches that you don't get to see elsewhere, and they are determined to present that big match, right?
Yep.
It's going to be Jimmy Rave against whoever, against Chip Day. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. We're going to bring in Trevor Lee, and he's going to wrestle this guy. Like, they do a great job with the big fight feel, and that's something that that's wrestling, man. Like, nothing is more pro wrestling than – I mean, that's the appeal. Brock Lesnar has no other appeal beyond that's a big fight guy. And if you're going to be in the ring with him, you got to be worthy of it. There's always that feeling about Brock Lesnar, you know, and they do a great job of presenting a big fight feel.
Well done, Stephen Platten, because, I mean, Murder One and Sabu, whatever else happens on that show, I want to see that. Cedric Alexander, yep. Jimmy Rave. I want to see that.
I want to see it. I mean, you know, like, it's – they're not going to be the group that's going to develop – Carpenter is not going to come out of their group, right?
No.
They're not going to have that kind of patience. They're not going to – but, you know, God, I mean, what a great use of Cedric Alexander. If you're going to bring him in, do something with him, and they're doing it. So what's something, though, and I mean, I think this is going to be a conversation, what's something AWE can learn from the other leagues?
Constraints.
Meaning what? Yes.
Do not exceed your means, whatever those means may be it location constraint, be it budget constraint, be it booking constraint, whatever it is, know how to use your thing, do the thing you want to do, but still come out on top and not have to scramble as much as it seems like they sometimes have to do.
From Shane Knowles, they could learn effective promoting.
Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, it's hard when you're – because AWE more or less is a startup, right?
Yeah.
And because of the way they do shows, where they sort of happen sporadically – look, I use that word from Clueless – sporadically, it's hard to gain traction. And I know they're putting out the posters and things like that, but, man, it's tough. I mean, I can't agree more. Like, Shane Knowles is – a great promoter. He's been promoter of the year, and they obviously haven't found their groove. They've had one show that I think you could call an unqualified success, and they weren't able to capitalize on it. Maybe it's just a matter of narrowing the focus a little bit, you know, instead of looking for the next thing that's going to pop a crowd. I think they just got to dig in and get into Slow and Steady Wins the Race. Maybe the fact that they're running shows on a regular schedule now at the what's the name of that space, the Fourth Ward or whatnot? Like, they're doing three shows there in August, which I would on the face of it say that's crazy. But if they can build from show to show and come out of the end of August better than they were going in at the beginning of August, then that's a step in the right direction for sure. So. And then the Sabu Murder One match is in September. So how great would that be if they could right the ship at the other space and then go back to Masquerade with a kind of a Roman triumph of a match with Murder One and Sabu? Because, I mean, make no mistake about it. If they get a spike in attendance, it's because of that poster and that match. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with all of that. My turn to throw out a league. You're going to groan because you're going to think of the difficulty of talking about this league. All the more reason to do it. UIW.
God damn you.
Larry, I know you haven't attended a lot of UIW events as of late, but what's something that you think they're doing right in general?
Excuse me.
Uh-oh.
I do have a cough. I was not intentionally coughing about UIW, but with that said, I'm hard pressed to. And it's not even fair because they haven't gone to their shows. So it's really, I'm really talking out of school to say anything about them because I haven't gone to their shows. I'll just pass on that one.
Oh, Hankins.
They won't stop punching. Whatever happens, they find more people to put on the show, no matter what. You know, I've been booking now for a year solidly, and it's never fun. It's sometimes rewarding. It's always a challenge, but it's never fun. I never have fun doing this. Maybe for about 10 minutes after the show's over, when everything goes well, you breathe out and you had a good time. But if I had to suffer some of the things that they had to suffer, I'd have washed my hands
yeah.
of this. But they won't. They will not. And
I'm going to give you two. I'm going
to
give you two because right now it's like all of us are trying to answer the college essay where you have no idea what they're even asking in the question. That's what it sounds like. So I'm going to give you two. One, I think that they've developed a consistent look for their posters and the stuff that they put out publicly. I can look at a thing from a distance and know that's a UIW thing. And yeah. while that doesn't seem like a big deal, there's a lot of leagues that have been scrambling and changing their look, whereas UIW has held consistently with that style for quite some time. So that's a minor thing that they're doing right. The major thing that they're doing right is, I think, making AJ Steele such a prominent part of that show. I don't know if he books that show or not, but his fingerprints are kind of all over that show. I'll say this, the good fingerprints are AJ Steele's,
yes.
right? The effective and consistent use of Pandora, for example, right? And him being booked it up top. Now, some would say, well, if he's using his influence, AJ Steele's all they got, folks. Like,
right.
he has to book himself on top, or else we're going to see Billy Knight versus Russian Assassin number two at the top of the bill. So AJ Steele is doing the best with what I can only imagine are huge constraints. And keeping that thing afloat, I think AJ Steele is their best asset, and the people that he surrounds himself with, like Pandora. Okay, here's the bigger question. What can UIW learn from the other leagues?
Phone numbers.
Phone numbers.
How to stay relevant?
Let's do one more league and then go into our last segment. Anybody have a league that they want to talk about?
Well,
all of us could put our teeth in.
With both of you guys on here, I think we should touch on PCW.
Sure.
All right.
PCW. Hankins, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's something the PCW is doing right? The use of minorities in positions
use
of authority.
Of minorities, number one. Black and women and long-haired hippie types are rocking and rolling in PCW. One thing that I think we do right is we listen to our audience, and we give them what we think they want, and we also give them a dose of what we think they should want.
That's always been a thing.
Yeah, that's sort of our way. And you know, we still are the place where I think people always learn things, and you know, we'll take in the woe be gone here and there, and we'll polish them up, and we'll hug them real tight around the neck. And we'll try to get the most can out of them. And we lead the league What's, in Belmont.
Larry, what do you think PCW is doing right?
You touched on it earlier, but I got to say comedy, which I find so many promotions are, come up short in the area of comedy. PCW does comedy really well.
Yeah, I will say something I think PCW does right is I think PCW has branded itself better than any other promotion, whether it's, you know, some jackass named Stephen Platinum who's constantly making noise, whose name's attached to the promotion, or there's one, and again, people might get mad at this, screw them, I think I'm right, there's one big show in the state that matters more than anybody else's, that people know absolutely by name, and it's Sacred Ground. I think a lot of work went into down from there really is no other big show for PCW. You can argue that Revolutionary War Games is a big show, and certainly nothing that happened last Saturday would dissuade me from that. But Sacred Ground is the show. It's where our booking season ends and begins. And there are still wrestlers. Like, Sacred Ground is the show where the guys go, I got to get on Sacred Ground. I got to have a match on Sacred Ground. That is like, that is people, some people's career goal is to work that show. I mean, that's the show where everyone's going to buy new gear. That's the show where everybody's going to get very excited. You know, it is Rick Michaels' favorite show because, I mean, and I mean, he always says it. He's like, I've never seen so much green. Like, everybody wants to do like some Stephen Platinum tribute with green gear. I think having a branded show, a branded promoter, and a brand that matters is what PCW does well. I'll throw this out, something that PCW can learn from the other leagues. Shit, I would like more people to watch it. It's yeah. Tough. PCW makes money regardless. It does. But, you know, man, it's hard not to be envious of other leagues. Even leagues I consider to be vastly inferior will draw in the 200s, you know?
Yeah.
And that space at Main Event is a great venue for wrestling, and it's not very big, but I'm talking about shows where we're not there. We've had trouble getting traction, and other yeah. leagues are able to do it. Big Wood's able to do it. He's able to go to a new town and within two or three shows, able to draw in that 150, 200 range. PCW has never been that league, and that's tough. So, well, cool, great discussion. Matt Hankins, can you tell us what we're about to hear? Larry
yeah.
and Matt and I are going to listen to this, and then we're going to put in our thoughts. So
wait,
what are we about to listen to? Yes, sir.
Can I touch on one thing before we go to the closing?
Yeah.
Tough Enough. I got to talk about mm-hmm. this for just a second. This
Please,
is,
yes.
This is horrible. This is
I agree.
Sad.
Whatever you're going to say, yes.
Who could give a rat's ass about any of these people?
I
and
could not.
The drive segments, this is horrible.
Yes. Okay. You know what? We're not going to do the last segment. We're going to talk about this
shit. Let it go. Let's go. Let's let it
I'm
go.
I'm so glad Larry brought it up. So now I don't look like the asshole. I am shocked at the show. And what shocks me about the show is never in my wildest dreams did I think Tough Enough would resemble Total Divas. And
yep.
the fact that I get a Total Divas vibe off of Tough Enough is embarrassing. I'm embarrassed, you know? I wrote Rachel a message. I wrote her an email saying, this is going to sound crazy. I think you not getting on Tough Enough is a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
I don't see where anybody's career is going to be helped. I mean, you might argue with me on that. You might say so-and-so or such-and-such will be able to get something out of it. Maybe. But if they do, it will be in spite of, not because of, that show.
Who
I think it is absolutely horrible.
Who has gotten something out of it?
I mean, the fact that they're trying to do, I mean, Larry used the perfect word, which is the word that's setting me off right now, contrived. The fact that they're trying to do something so contrived in such a short amount of time, hey, you can work people, you can, like, do all that, but not in the time that they've allotted themselves, because, you know, they started showing shows right after they started filming them.
Yep.
They didn't give themselves enough time to, like, find these stories. They're obviously pushing guys in this direction or that direction. Oh, I don't. And the fact that Raw is at such a weak point as the lead-in, I don't know. Is there an upside? Is this going to get better? Like, certainly, like, oh, here's an example. The Ultimate Fighter, which is the show that helped launch UFC into the stratosphere. I think that show, especially with the finals of the first season, you know, where those two guys just beat each other in the face, right? Like Stefan Bonner and Forrest Griffin. I mean, I can still remember those guys' names because that fight, to me, when that fight happened, it didn't – what people don't remember because that fight was so great was how terrible the format of that show used to be, where they used to have them do – remember they used to have them do these, like, dumb competitions to determine which team was going to get to pick who was going to fight who? And so they would be on the beach doing some kind of, like, relay race or egg toss or some horse shit that had nothing to do with fighting. But they listened, and they fixed that in the show. What does Tough Enough need to do, man? Because I hate it. I can't even hold it back. Larry, what's something Tough Enough needs to do to make that show good?
Well, find something organic in these characters that's, if there's anything there. I mean, maybe the die's already cast by the selection of people. Is there anything organic in these people that could be brought out that is of interest? I haven't seen it yet. And it's sure, I don't know, Kip James as the, like, authority figure, leaves me cold, is another problem with the show. You don't have that, you know, Steve Austin to carry the show like last time around.
Yep. Whatever they needed to do to get Steve Austin back, I can't believe they didn't do it. I can't believe they didn't do it. That's insane. That's like, I mean, it is as death nail as, we don't really need Simon Cowell anymore. Are you crazy? Like, that guy is the show, right? Truth be told. Matt Hankins, what's something that they can do?
Is it too late to start over? Is that an option? No, I think, honestly, I don't, my honest opinion is nothing they can do. You hit the nail on the head when you said it's Total Divas. They had success with Total Divas. This is a similar market. They're just trying to market to people who don't watch wrestling. So they're doing things that they don't think those people will watch. What I think they also need to stop doing is the Miz's show that runs on the network that talks about Tough Enough. You got to stop giving everything away on that show. If you're going to present it the way they're presenting it, you have to have people believe that those people really believe those things. And they're going on there and they're saying, oh, no, we're just playing it up because the camera's there. I really don't hate that person.
Why is it so hard for a pro wrestling company to realize that you're better off? There's a saying that they'll never remember what they learned. They'll never remember what you made them think about, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And that's my solution for Tough Enough. These are people who genuinely, their dream, and I hate, you know, Matt Hankins knows, I hate the cliche of it's my dream. More than any other statement, if you want to get punched in the face by me when I am training you, talk about your stupid dream, right? But these people really want to be on the show. They really see this as their ticket to a life that they want. Why do you have to manufacture fucking anything? Isn't that the crux of every competition-based reality show?
Yeah.
That
you're here.
I need this to happen in my life. I don't care if it's American Idol. I don't care if it's a cooking-based reality show like Top Chef. I don't care if it's Project Runway or we're doing monster makeup. the thing that they're competing, the medium in which they are competing is incidental. That's, and you think the WWE, who is dying to appeal to an audience that isn't professional wrestling's audience, would understand that better than anybody. That it's that's why I couldn't believe, and of course I'm biased, I can't believe Rachel didn't get at least an interview or an acknowledgement. That's insane to me, because I watched her video and I thought, my God, you know, that's a like that came across as real as it can get, where it's like, I was depressed and now I've learned to deal with my depression. I mean, that's their demographic.
And real inside their parameters, not real in the way that, oh, man, I think that guy can be a really good wrestler. Real in the way that, oh, yeah, that's a compelling story that housewives, you know, 49 to 50 might get behind.
Mm-hmm. I've said it before, but the WWE and Tough Enough heightens this. I don't know if they even know what's good anymore.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't know that they know or want real anymore.
I mean, isn't that what makes, if we're going to sit here and talk about just the WWE show, who are the performers that are the most compelling? And I don't mean from a pro wrestling standpoint. I just mean guys that you flat out go like, that guy is so clearly head and shoulders above the others. I'm talking like Paul Heyman. Well, how do they think Paul Heyman got to be Paul Heyman? It sure is. I mean, is natural ability have to play into it? Of course it does, right? But in the end, Heyman's just talking. Like, that's all he's doing. But the reason it works is there is a pathos to that guy that cannot be faked. And the fact that the WWE cannot mine these people for their genuine emotion of, this is what all I want. Young people, more than anybody, make compelling television. One, because you want to fuck them. So you're going to look at them. I mean, The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, I watched. How sad is this? Instead of watching Raw, this is what I watched. The fucking Bachelorette. I haven't watched that show in years, but I was with friends that were like, I'm going to this Bachelorette party. Do you want to go? And I only asked two questions. One, am I going to be fed? Answer, yes. Are there going to be dudes there? No. Great, I'm there, right? So I watched The Bachelorette, and hearing them talk about it, and The Bachelorette, that shit is as fake as fucking Anna Nicole's titties, sure. but it came across to them as real, and they're like, oh, that's Nick. I mean, I can remember these characters' names. What does that tell you? That's Nick. He came in on show 4 during a group date. He was on the last season, but he came in and kind of swept her off her feet right away, and then they had sex. And so now she's hesitant to tell the other guys that she had sex, especially Sean, because blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, they think it's real, right? I mean, it's everything is pro wrestling, right? They think that this is for real, that the emotions, and maybe they are, whatever, but again, it's the story. They found the compelling stories. It's people who are falling in love with this woman, and they all want her, and she has to get rid of them one by one. And so you're reading every facial expression. You're trying to guess what their motivations are. And I don't know why. Tough enough to me. But then again, let me throw this out there, guys. And then, I mean, we'll have to go. But let me throw this out there. At one point, NXT was garbage, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely horrible. I mean, the program, you know, when they had Daniel Bryan, you know, with Miz as his mentor, just stuff that seemed like deliberately provocative. The competition stuff was so terrible, right? Just so bad. But they managed to make that a brand that mattered. What's possible, like Hankins joked about it. I mean, I just see this season as a wash. Let's assume they're going to do, as was rumored, a diva search, okay? What is, and I want us to each name one thing that is pivotal for that diva search show to be perceived as great and to draw a rating on its own. What do they need to do, assuming that they're going to do a diva search, to make that thing not this thing? Because I cannot watch this thing again. And I feel like Rachel has got a legit shot on that. I feel like Rachel is going to, like, I can't help but think that, God, we got to give this, you know, a girl a shot on that show. So
for that Divas thing to work, they got to give me an ugly duckling.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Gotta give me one. Gotta give me one. Give me one that the wrestling people and the regular Joes can fucking get behind, and because she's the one that's really good at the wrestling, or she's the one that's really good at doing whatever it is they have them do. But you know that she's not going to win because she's not pretty enough. She's got to be there, and she's got to get to the semifinal.
Larry, what's an idea? We're all producers on Diva Search. What's something that you're going to insist on?
No, you know, don't manufacture shit.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
I think this is as simple as it gets. Let it be.
Here's one. And this is along the what both of you said. Like, don't manufacture shit, and you need an ugly duckling. Open your mind. Like, the woman that wins does not have to be between the ages of 18 and 25. She does not need to have fake boobs. She does not need to be blonde or blade. Open your mind. Somewhere out there, there's a Susan Boyle of wrestling.
Right.
Right? Somewhere out there, there's a Kelly Clarkson of wrestling. You know? Somewhere out there, there's fucking, you know. Open your mind to the possibility that one of the things that I think is so brilliant on Hell's Kitchen, for example, is, yes, they have all these chefs that are like sous chefs at great restaurants. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, Hell's Kitchen is like Gordon Ramsay's competition show. But you know who you remember? You remember the Waffle House chef.
Yep.
That managed to – like, they don't understand that the WWE, for a group that insists that it's a television show, not a wrestling show – you know what? They don't understand what fucking television is. They don't understand what storytelling is. Here's storytelling. I'm about to give you gold. Storytelling is about transformation. It's about changing. That's it. An epic journey is about you change from one kind of person to another. You learn something along the way and you change. They don't understand that the point isn't let's find somebody who's a model and make them into a wrestler. The point is you find somebody who's nothing but a good person, and then through being a good person with an iron will, they transform themselves into something that's remarkable. That's the trend. It's the Biggest Loser, and their problem is they want to give you the person who's only 110 pounds and put them on the Biggest Loser, right? They don't understand that it's about the journey, that it would be more amazing to see real, quote-unquote, whatever that means, real people. And then, you know, there are girls out there that don't know how to do makeup and hair. You find those girls, and somewhere along that season, you go, let us show you what you can do with yourself, and you show us that transformation. I guarantee you it's the highest rated show they'd have all year. Instead of a bunch of girls who you kind of already know, like, oh yeah, she's hot, which is how people are convinced they pick it now, right? Instead, you find true diamonds in the rough in every way, shape, or form. And then you see, as Larry said, are they really diamonds in the rough? Guess what? Some of them aren't. Some of them are freaking horse apples, right? You pull on them and they're shit and they fall apart. That's part of it. You need Sanjaya in freaking American Idol. You need guys that suck who don't get better. Contrast is storytelling. You don't just have like, cookie cutter. Is that not the phrase we hear with the WWE again and again and again? Yeah, and it seems like at NXT, they're willing to break it a little bit, right?
Right.
Though, I don't know, if Raw keeps tanking and this Kevin Owens push keeps going, at some point I wonder when they're going to blame it on that, right? It's like, that's why we don't deviate, guys. You know, how many of your favorite little wrestling midgets have we put on the air and it's killing us, yep. Blah, blah, blah. But it's because they don't know the story and they don't understand that we want to see the transformation. We want to see Rocky Maivia turn into The Rock.
Yeah.
We want to see the Ringmaster become Stone Cold.
Yep.
Everything doesn't have to like hit a home run out of the box. We'll give you time. Wrestling fans have always shown we'll hang with you, but you gotta at some point show us why we're spending our time with this stuff. And I think they need to just go. It was prime for them to do it. I think this whole like fight like a girl thing, the rise of Ronda Rousey, who this is how amazing things are. Ronda Rousey, can I say something about her? She's not hot. She's not hot. But you know what? Everybody's convinced she is. Because of who she is.
Yep.
Because who she is attractive. Right? And so she becomes attractive physically. She herself says, I don't work out. I mean, I don't care about that body issue shit.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, I'm eating a fucking meatball sub. I'm not in fight training right now. You know, but that's what makes her appealing.
The exact same person, except she's really funny instead of really good at fighting. Same story.
Yeah.
Exact same story. But here we are, mad at the WWE because they trotted out a bunch of models in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And don't understand that that's not what people relate to.
Yeah. Well,
you got to be able to relate to these.
Great discussion. Larry, can I put a bug in your ear about guests to get for next week?
Okay.
I don't know if a certain someone has been sending you things that they found on Facebook about the whole thing. There's a lot of stuff going on in Tennessee.
Yes. That's exactly where I was going.
Oh, good. I think we need to nab some guests and I don't know. I think that discussion is certainly better than any story being told in tough enough. And it's a story that you're going to want to hear. I think it's going to be very exciting to hear about. So we're going to hear a lot about the Tennessee drama happening next week. Now, real quickly, Matt Hankins, please tell us what we're about to hear and comment on.
All right. So it's my belief that out of context, wrestling is always going to be ridiculous. That if you're not watching wrestling, strictly to be watching wrestling, there's no way for it to cross over. And I think that's no more evident in its own commercials about products related to wrestling or wrestling shows in general. And so I have
a couple examples. You have a couple of commercials, and then we'll talk about them real quick, and then we'll see you next week. Please.
The first thing we're going to hear is a WCW wrestling action figure outfit. And I don't remember these at all, but maybe some of you will.
WCW Tough Talking Wrestling. So smart, they know who they're talking to.
Bring it on. That's Goldberg. I dare you.
They're really talking to each other.
Goldberg.
You're no match for the singer Slash.
They actually know each other's name.
Yo, Jacko, don't turn your back on me, Nash.
Whoa, he really knows it's Nash.
Tough talking wrestlers even know who they're fighting.
My right arm will tear you in half. Nash, let's try.
They even know who they're pinning.
No one can beat the singer.
GDP. You, 12-inch WCW Tough Talking Wrestlers come in two packs. Batteries not included.
Now, can you imagine G.I. Joe being excited about knowing who other G.I. Joes were?
All I when I hear that, the first thing I think of is, well, no wonder they're so excited, because in WCW, the wrestlers never knew who they were going to wrestle. I think that's actually a good place to stop. I think we'll listen to some more commercials next week. We'll talk about the Tennessee scene and everything else going on. I want to hear, oh, Miss Rachel, by the way. Not that we have many listeners from the St. Louis area, but we might. When she gets back from Ireland, she goes through St. Louis. She's going to work in her hometown, and apparently a bunch of people from her high school are coming to the show on July 11th. And then there's a bunch of other great shows, including Anarchy, happening this Saturday. From Larry Goodman, from Matt Hankins, I am Stephen Platinum. Woo! Thanks for sitting with us. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week on The Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network.
Because God knows kids get excited.
Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Oh, good. The Goldberg one talks. Excellent.
Better than the regular one did.